They say that the grandeur of Versailles in the age of the Sun King has never been surpassed, although, human nature being what it is, one soon gets used to anything. In the middle of Louis XIV's long reign, the youngest son of a minor nobleman was brought by his father to live at court. Surrounded by art, music, and conversation of the very highest order, to receive an education at the court of Versailles, it was, as his father repeatedly told him, merely necessary for the boy to remain awake. In the Palace of Versailles, where Louis shone at the centre of a universe of his own making, the boy often felt like a spectator at a never-ending circus, relieved that the all-powerful ringmaster had not noticed him and did not require him to perform. It was only much later that he understood what a privilege fate had bestowed on him, allowing him to have observed at first hand and at such a tender age the rules of the game at the court of the Sun King. The boy's name was Jean-Pierre, and that boy was me. What I am about to describe happened so very long ago, it begins to sound, even to my own ears, like a fairy tale. And yet, here I am, pen in hand, holding up a lens to my distant past. I recognise that boy, but I cannot always feel him. Jean-Pierre is myself, and he is also another. When I recall my arrival at court, for example, which was a momentous day in my young life, even though the images are bright and crisp, I see them as if I were a spirit sitting on my own shoulder. My father had often spoken of the magnificence of Versailles, but his words did not prepare me for my first sight of it. I was sick after 3 days in a stuffy rolling carriage, but they still had to drag me away from the blue and gold railings, where I clung on, spellbound, my fingers growing numb in the biting cold. You must understand that it was an age when one's knowledge of the world was limited to a radius of a few miles from one's birthplace. It's difficult to comprehend today such ignorance. If anyone in our village travelled to the nearest big town, we would cluster around them for news on their return. The largest house I'd ever seen was our own, which was smaller than the king's stables. And so it was that I gawped in awe at this vast palace, built of brick and honey-coloured stone that glowed rose-pink in the light of a dying winter sun. Surely, I thought, I will not be permitted to spend my days here. While there was still light enough to see, my father took me by the hand, and we walked to the back of the palace to view the gardens. We stood together on the brink of a new life, our breath coming out in great clouds of steam. The sense of immense luminous distances all leading to and from that spot was overwhelming. It was as if the cold air itself had been sculpted by a master hand. Radiating outwards from the palace were wide lawns and generous terraces, all perfectly symmetrical. Topiary, statues, and magnificent fountains drew the eye to the misty distance, where a rectangular lake reflected the red evening sky like a gigantic mirror. When I beheld that astonishing vista, I laughed out loud, both in delight and disbelief. This was the desired effect. The king was, after all, God's representative on earth. His power was absolute, and his home should bear witness to the fact. "You see," said my father, "did I not tell you that Versailles is the greatest palace on earth?" It was the only palace that I'd seen, although I've seen a great many since. The scale and ambition of its creator's vision astounds me still. I had no understanding then of what this splendour had cost the people. A century later, I saw the revolutionaries desecrate the Sun King's grave. They tossed Louis's bones into a pit, along with the assorted remains of those who had reigned over France for 1,000 years. I do not judge. I witness. The wheel of life revolves. To be alive is to change. Nothing lasts forever. And anyone who believes that it does is a fool.